FT News Briefing is supported by Merrill. We all have dreams. Dream houses, dream vacations, or sending our kids to their dream colleges. But finding straightforward ways to turn those dreams into realistic goals, that's where things get tricky. Merrill understands that. That's why, with a dedicated Merrill advisor, you get a personalized plan and a clear path forward. And having the bull at your back helps your whole financial life move with you. So when your plans change, Merrill is with you every step of the way. Go to ml.com/bullish to learn more. Merrill, a Bank of America company. What would you like the power to do? Investing involves risk. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith Incorporated, registered broker-dealer, registered investment advisor, member SIPC.
Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, and this is your FT News Briefing. NATO is trying to Trump-proof funding for the war in Ukraine. And despite wealthy countries' best efforts, birth rates are still falling. Plus, Thames Water is in major financial trouble.
It's hard to understate what a big issue the crisis has become in Britain, mostly because of the sewage pollution.
I'm Sonia Hudson, and here's the news you need to start your day. NATO is drawing up plans for a $100 billion aid package to help Ukraine. The proposal is an effort to defend against the, quote, winds of political change. That's politician speak for a second Trump presidency. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has been pretty clear that he's not interested in continuing to fund Ukraine's war effort. And neither are a lot of Republican lawmakers. A $60 billion military support package has been stalled in Congress for months. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg is sponsoring the plan, and it'll be discussed today during a meeting of foreign ministers. Thames Water is in crisis. The British utility is in a lot of debt, and it's struggling to control sewage and water leaks. Its parent company, Kemble, could enter insolvency in just a few weeks, and it's started negotiations to restructure. But maybe the bigger problem for the UK is that Thames Water isn't the only utility in trouble. The FT's Jill Plimmer joins me now to talk about it. Hey, Jill.
Hi.
So what's the latest when it comes to Thames Water?
So Thames Water is the largest water company in Britain. It serves about a quarter of the population. And the story has been unfolding over the past year. The CEO left last July because she couldn't get agreement with shareholders over how much money should be put in. Then there were various pledges from shareholders that they would put money in. Finally, last week, they've decided they definitely won't put any more money in. And now Thames Water's board and its investors have started urgent restructuring talks about what should happen next.
And just back up for me really quickly here. I mean, this seems like a big crisis if they're at the point where they're talking about these big restructurings. How did Thames Water get into this mess?
So Thames Water, like the other water companies, was privatized with no debt in 1989. Under Margaret Thatcher, who was Prime Minister at the time. And since then, Thames has built up £18 billion of debt. And then in the past year, of course, interest rates have risen. So they've had to pay a much higher proportion of their income towards servicing that debt. Other companies are in, you know, relatively similar situations, but they're just not quite as big and they don't have quite that debt burden that Thames has.
Yeah, so it sounds like Thames Water is not alone in some of these problems, but how does it compare to other water utilities in the UK?
There's also a lot of other companies in trouble. Southern Water is another big water company that was rescued by the Australian infrastructure manager, Macquarie. And there's others, South East Water, SES Water, Portsmouth, Yorkshire. Lots of them have had troubles at different times. But one of the water investors has called Thames Water a canary in a coal mine.
Wow. And so what do all these problems at major water companies across the country mean for customers?
It's hard to understate what a big issue the crisis has become in Britain, mostly because of the sewage pollution. There were figures out from the Environment Agency last week that showed that almost every sewage outflow was pumping raw effluent into rivers and tributaries and coastal waters a lot of the time. And people are really upset about this. It's really captured the country.
What's the solution here? I mean, you mentioned that a lot of these public utilities became privatized during the Thatcher era. Is renationalization the answer?
Well, it's certainly popular, according to the YouGov polls, which showed roughly sort of more than 60% support renationalization. I think at the moment, the trouble is there's no money. Somehow these water companies need cash to make up for the legacy of not having invested enough for 34 years. And that's a really big issue for the government. It's absolutely determined not to renationalize. Another point is that England and Wales are the only places in the world to have fully privatised water services on this scale. So even Scotland and Northern Ireland haven't privatised their water services. England and Wales are really outliers in this type of privatisation. It's very unclear what the future is. And ultimately, consumers who pay all the costs haven't been delivered value for money services.
Jill Plummer is the FT's infrastructure correspondent. Thanks, Jill.
Thanks so much for talking to me.
Southern Europe is having an economic growth spurt. The four biggest southern economies, that's Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Greece, have collectively outgrown Germany by about 5% since 2017. Partly because they've seen a big boost in tourism since the end of the pandemic. Germany's economy, on the other hand, has barely grown in the last few years, thanks to things like a slowdown in manufacturing and higher energy prices due to the war in Ukraine. Now, that might not be the best news for Germany, but the growth in the South is making the European Central Bank's job a little easier in determining how and when to cut interest rates. It's also helped narrow the gap between what it costs Southern Europe to borrow compared with Germany. In the last few decades, a lot of developed countries have boosted spending on family-friendly policies. It's all in an effort to reverse a pretty alarming trend. Young people just aren't having kids anymore. But the problem is, those programs haven't really worked. John Byrne Murdoch is the FT's chief data reporter, and he's been looking at the reasons why. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So, John, give me the scope of the problem here. Just how low have birth rates fallen in developed countries, and how much have governments invested in trying to reverse it?
Yeah, so the number that we really care about here is 2.1 births per woman. That's what we call the replacement rate. And that basically means that if every woman had 2.1 children, and of course, that's not strictly possible. You can only have a whole number. But, you know, you get the idea. If that happened, then populations would stay stable. But if we look at what's happened over the last 40 years, for example, the richest, most prosperous nations have pretty much tripled the amount of money they spend per person on child benefits, on subsidized childcare, tax breaks, parental leave, all of these what we might call family-friendly policies. And yet over that same 40-year period, the average birth rate across these countries has fallen from 1.85 to 1.53. So even though there's been a big increase in spending on all of these family-friendly policies, the birth rate has continued to trend downwards.
Okay, so definitely not having the intended impact. Why is that?
It's not that these policies don't do anything, but it's just that they're competing with a lot of these much broader socioeconomic trends that have been playing out over several decades now. And one of the reasons here is this trend in what people call intensive parenting or helicopter parenting. Parents are spending more time raising kids today than in the past. Another factor is the general trends of liberalisation and the great expansion of the opportunities available for women in particular to achieve a sense of fulfilment, whether from their career or from other leisure and entertainment activities over the last few decades. And then you have the rise in anxiety and other mental health conditions among young people. And we know that people who are more anxious, more worried, are less likely to have children or more likely to have fewer children. So all of these trends are pushing birth rates downwards. Government policies are certainly doing something, but it's a bit like they're running up the down escalator.
And what are some of the consequences of people not having more children?
So I think that all sorts of things that we think to be good about the world are associated with populations that are growing. Countries with growing populations and younger populations are much, much more innovative. There are, of course, the fiscal issues that arise from a country that has far more older people than younger people. That requires a much greater burden on the working population to support that older generation. So, you know, some people would say that with the conditions physically that the world is in, the environment, that perhaps shrinking populations might be a good thing. But I think on balance, certainly there seem to be more negatives than positives for countries going through that.
So it kind of seems like we're reaching this pretty significant tipping point. What, if anything, could turn it around?
I think some of this will simply be gradual change over time. You know, it could simply be that as we settle around a new normal of family sizes, that the reduction that we've been seeing at least stabilizes. And then you've got other factors. So regardless of what happens to birth rates themselves, things like immigration can reduce the threat of population decline or indeed produce stabilizing or rising populations in certain parts of the world that are most affected by this. And so I think in a world where birth rates continue to prove relatively stubborn in terms of the influence policy can have on them, we're probably heading to a world where immigration will become more and more important.
John Byrne Murdoch is the FT's chief data reporter. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
You can read more on all these stories at FT.com for free when you click the links in our show notes. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back tomorrow for the latest business news.
At the Kellogg School of Management, we believe in the power of dual aspirations, where connection, collaboration, and community drive meaningful change while redefining what it means to be a leader. Whether it's our full-time, part-time, executive MBA, or executive education programs, Kellogg is the next level of leadership for the next level of business. Learn more at kell.gg/leader. That's kell.gg/leader.
What's 2FA security on Kraken? Let's say I'm captaining my soccer team, and we're up by a goal against, I don't know, Soda Springs FC. Do we relax? No way. Time to create an extra line of defense and protect that lead. That's like 2FA on Kraken, a surefire way to keep what you already have, safe and sound. Go to Kraken.com and see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Interactive Inc., PWI, DBA Kraken. View PWI's disclosures at Kraken.com/legal/disclosures.